get to know the artist behind the epic melodies, songs, and beats. Celebrating the best new music from around the world. This is the A State of Trance Podcast.
Hey, what's up? My name is Ruben Ronde and welcome to a new A State of Trance Podcast with this time in the studio, the guys from Hellsloat. Well, Misha has been here before because one of the first podcasts back in 2021, sounds a long time ago. It is a long time ago. Was with you actually.
Yeah,
so we dove into your history a little bit already. Now you brought your partner in crime, Michael De Coco, with you.
Yeah.
The Hellsloat boys. How are you doing?
Yeah, we're fine.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
You don't know what's going to come. So you know it.
Yeah,
Michael does.
I have absolutely no idea.
So my recommendation, if you want to hear more about Hellsloat, because he has a long history as well. Misha Hellsloat in this case, not Hellsloat, but Hellsloat.
Yeah, just
a bit confusing, to be honest.
Yeah, I know. And there's even another Hellsloat.
That's true.
Just to make it even more complicated.
I think we should do a collab with him.
Yeah.
Hellsloat and then the Misha Hellsloat remix. I think that's a good idea. Yeah. Anyways, let's dive into the history a little bit of Michael De Coco.
Hello.
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 Because we spoke with Misha about his whole history already, which is ancient because this man is really old.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
So let's talk about you first, because the first time you came on my radar was in 2007.
Yeah.
When you released a track called The Twist.
Yeah.
Which I remixed.
Yeah, definitely. Place. Yeah, you worked here back then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was for Cloud9, I think.
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit, how did you fall in love with dance music?
So dance music is something special, right? I think when I started listening to music, the most popular genres were, especially in Holland, were the bit harder genres like the Thunderdomes and like the happy hardcore, DJ mm-hmm. Paul Elstak, that kind of stuff. And then at some point, I heard a track that was different. It was slower. It was very melodic. And it was Guiela Guiela.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was the first time that I understood trance. This is trance, you know. It was new back then. So it was the actual first trance single I ever bought.
Yeah.
And it still blows my mind these days because it's so good. And after that, you know, I went more into trance and more. And I wanted to start producing it as well.
So first you started as listening to music,
yeah,
as a fan, going to parties. And then at a certain point you were like, hey, I want to start creating this as well.
That's it. Yeah, exactly.
Do you still remember that moment that you first opened your DAW and for the first time started to make music?
Oh man, yeah. Yeah, I actually started pretty soon. I think I was 10 or 11 or something. And back then they were like these trackers, like Fast Tracker and
Fast Tracker.
And that's where I started. And then you had this special menu. If you clicked, you could play Snake. So in between the sessions, I could play Snake. And back then it was like hardcore and other stuff. There was no real dance scene with the DAW, with that. And then at some point I went over to FL Studio. And I basically never looked back.
So you're still using Fruity Loops?
Yeah, yeah.
So from the moment that you started using Fruity Loops, which year was that?
Oh, I really don't know. I think it was a pretty soon version.
Maybe 2002, 2003, something like that.
Yeah, I think something.
How long did it take you before you were actually confident enough to send it over to a label to...
Oh, I wasn't. No. I wasn't. I just uploaded my music and at some point a friend of mine, Jeroen, DJ Jeroen, he wanted to do a collaboration and I did. And he was the one that sent it to Armada. Mm-hmm. And Armada sent it to Cloud9. And they basically signed the first tracks, which were uplifting.
Mm-hmm.
But I always wanted, like, I wanted to do all genres, not just uplifting, not just this. So the first track for me that was signed that was different was The Twist.
Yeah.
Like a bit lower in tempo, a bit more mellow, but also with a break that was a twist, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And then, yeah, I think you sent me an email. Hey, I like this track. I want to remix it.
Yeah.
And you did. And yeah. It was awesome.
If I listen back to those tracks right now, I'm like, what the?
That's true.
This is horrible.
But at that moment, it just worked.
Yeah, I think Tiësto even played it.
Yeah, Tiësto played it. But also, I did a remix for you as well. You did with Bram Troost.
Yeah. Trocadero.
And that's also one that Tiësto played and all the other guys. So if you listen back, it sounds very simple. But back then, it was just so effective.
I can't believe it. Long time ago. It's already 16 years ago.
It is, yeah.
And then, you started with uplifting stuff together with DJ Jeroen. The Twist was your first single release.
Yeah.
And then a big moment came. Because Cloud9, where you released these tracks, asked you to do remix one of your favorite classics.
That's true. Yeah, yeah, that was a crazy moment because I was here at the office basically just discussing things and not for like a reason, just a random moment. And then Raymond came to me and basically said, "Hey, listen, we're looking for remixes of Ferracocha Carte Blanche.
Yeah.
Are you interested?" And I was like, "What do you think? Of course." So I remixed the track and I thought, okay, this is it, nothing serious. And then they basically picked that version as the version they were going to push to the radio.
Yeah.
But the crazy thing is there were remixes from, I think, Cosmic Gate and others as well. And I fully expected those remixes to be like the big ones. And they picked my remix and it reached the top 40 and whatever. And it just blew my mind.
It was on the radio the whole time, yeah.
I think it was the third played dance track of that year. Absolutely crazy.
Yeah. But still, not long after that, you were like, okay, I'm not going to do any music anymore for myself because you went a different route.
Well, it's a bit of like, I was a bit forced because I ran into some health issues back then. And basically the whole lifestyle of like a DJ and all that kind of stuff, I just couldn't keep up.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a choice basically like, okay, what am I going to do? I can't really do this. With the health issues I have, I can't really do like an office job.
Mm-hmm.
And then I just thought, okay, I'm going to do what I think is fun. Mm-hmm. And I hope I can earn some money with it. So I went producing for others.
Yeah, ghost producing.
Yeah, yeah, basically. Yeah, and that went really well. And that's what I've been doing ever since. But now with Hellsloot, I have an opportunity to do what I think is fun. But also like the health is, it's better. Mm-hmm. So I can do it. And so now I'm just enjoying every moment I get. And together with Misha, we're basically just killing it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's very true. Because like I said, years went by. And suddenly, Misha Hellsloot came into your life. How did that come about? It sounds like a romantic story.
It is. It is almost.
It involves Michael's wife also.
Yeah. So that's a really big, yeah.
Yeah, tell us.
Okay, I'm going to tell you.
Well, no. Okay, we're sidetracking right now.
Yeah.
So Misha, tell us, what was the first time that you met Michael?
Well, the first time I cannot really remember. I think it was in a club in The Hague. No, in Utrecht.
Yeah, probably. That's
what I can remember. It was a student club.
Puma?
No. Somewhere underneath student building, student apartments.
I don't know.
I don't know. Yeah. Doesn't matter. And then we just talked a little bit. And later on, when Daniela was doing my socials, and I knew Michael was her husband, I sent him some stuff just to advise and just to maybe help me a little bit.
Yeah.
And then for a sudden, I think it was just before Corona, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, somewhere. Well, it doesn't really matter. Maybe that's because Corona. That's it. It's our.
Yeah, it was. I think so.
Doesn't matter.
Yeah.
And he started to, maybe a little bit advice, maybe we can do this. And then we started to talk like we can make it a project and just see, beside having a lot of fun, see where we can get.
Yeah. Because it started, because we spoke about this last time you were here, that was a bit launching the project, Hellsloot.
Yeah.
The first release was, I guess, Sequest. No, was it?
No, I did a remix for
C Sharp, the Quest.
Yeah, C Sharp.
Was that the first one?
No, I did a remix for Hugh Holland. Okay. No, okay. He always mix up his first.
Hugh Holland.
Yeah, but
Hugh Holland.
No, but he does always. He does well. Just look it up.
Yeah.
I did a remix for them and they loved it. And then I did a remix for Han Beukers, I think. Yeah. I also played it here. And
that was before you started working with Michael.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. You can actually hear that.
we were already in contact and basically the idea was not to start yet, but develop the project a bit before we actually went.
Yeah.
But he already released it.
Yeah. He was like, okay, I'm not going to wait for that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, too long.
Because to give it a little bit of context, because we know you, of course, as Misha Hellsloot.
Yeah.
As an artist that has been performing for 25 years, biggest clubs, biggest festivals.
Even this year.
Even earlier, I heard that Armin played on your wedding.
Yeah,
Armin used to be your warm-up DJ in several shows.
Yeah,
but that was mostly until now, and still is uplifting trance music.
Yeah.
So why did you start the side project?
Basically, because I just didn't like it anymore.
Yeah.
I still could get the energy from playing classics, maybe because that's the tracks you love.
Yeah.
But basically, everything that came out I just didn't like it. I just, well, in the you can read a lot about that. They call it template trends.
Yeah.
A lot of people are using templates, and maybe it's okay to use a template, but
just change the little notes and just, you have the
yeah,
same
then
track.
Yeah, you have basically. It. And but when I was doing a radio show for Grotesque, then I found out that when I placed the jingles in a certain time every week, the jingles were still in time because there was always a break.
Yeah.
And then I was like,
same arrangement for every single track.
Yeah. So everything was the same and it just didn't make sense anymore. I just, and again, the fun comes up. It wasn't fun to create it anymore.
Because it was very serious. Like you follow this path, and if you do anything else,
yeah, but
then people start labeling as this is not trance.
Yeah, that's exactly that. Yeah. Because when you're doing a sidestep, maybe a little bit slower, a little bit faster, or rougher, or whatever, it was you were called names because it was not trance.
Mm-hmm.
And but it's still the music I love to create. And if they don't like it, okay, don't like it, I'll just go for another path.
Mm-hmm. But that's also and like just, with the classics, right? All the classics, if you listen back to the early trance, it wasn't all the same.
Everything is different.
Yeah.
Yeah, the levels are different, the kicks are different, the whole structure of a track is different. And well, that's what I love right now. It's like when we, especially when we're doing our monthly radio show, collecting those tracks, it's not certainly, not only looking for one type of music,
mm-hmm.
it's just there's in my opinion there's only two types of music: good music, bad music.
Yeah,
and for everybody that's different. I just collect the music we like, and that's what we use. And of course, it's all dance music, but sometimes it's a bit more housey, sometimes a bit more techno, and sometimes a bit more trendy.
So it's more diverse again.
Yeah, it's really, yeah, absolutely.
But the funny thing is, when I look back at when I started DJing and producing, was the times when I was listening to a lot of your stuff, your mixes, and that was also very diverse.
Yeah, absolutely. But
because the stuff that you put it out on your labels was, it went from Oscar Khan to Sean Walsh.
Yeah.
So it was like, and anything in between. So yeah. At a certain point, you were just going into uplifting only, and now you're going apart again.
Yeah, but it's like, I can remember that I was liking the progressive stuff a lot more than I liked the trance stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But because I did the In Trance We Trust compilation two times, people expect that.
Mm-hmm. Or you thought that people expected it?
No, because I could see when I was playing a little bit deeper set, they didn't mm-hmm. like it, and they came up and, can you go up, go faster, all that kind of stuff.
But it was also a bit of the market, right? The market went a bit like much of the same at some point. And pretty much all DJs needed to do that.
Yeah. Yeah, I cannot really put my finger on it, but I think it's like I just went there what the people expect, because you're the guy who started In Trance. Well, I did not start.
Yeah, you were the first one to mix it.
I was to do that. So they always expect uplifting trance. So that's, and I really first thought I wanted to do this project just under my normal name.
Mm-hmm.
But I just thought it would conflict to a lot of people. Of course, still it looks a little bit the same.
Yeah.
I think it would not fit somehow, because people still think if I put that name on it, it's uplifting trance.
Yeah.
I don't want that anymore. Well, I still play it, and I start enjoying it again, but then again, a little bit different.
Yeah.
So just the things I learned from Michael, I take that with me. So I delete everything.
You learned something from me?
Yeah, yeah,
wow.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
No.
Oh, I'll take that compliment.
We have a new ringtone.
Yeah.
No, but I already started to do some trends again. I'm not sure I'm going to release it or just, but I enjoy it again, but just without the rules, 2 minutes, a breakdown, one minute later, a drop.
Put your hands in the air.
Yeah, that kind of stuff. Yeah, no, I'm not doing
in,
that.
In all honesty, I have this discussion a lot in the podcast here. Don't you think that genres are disappearing anyway?
I hope so.
Yeah,
I hope so too. I think it's mostly down to, well, you see something similar happening in techno right now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, techno being very popular, and then suddenly there are the techno gatekeepers telling the this is not techno. But at the same time, you see a lot of techno events and DJs over there playing like classic trance tracks or new remixes or whatever. So I'm all for it, because that's the fun part. That's where the fun is.
Yeah, because the funny thing is when I listen to your music and I put it next to Anima, for example,
yeah,
there's not so much of a difference. While yours is maybe a little bit more euphoric, but there's not a lot of difference.
Yeah, yeah, that's the whole idea. We don't want to do one thing. We want to do a lot of things and try to find somewhat of a middle road and, mm-hmm. and just always find something that's maybe not expected or just a bit unexpected, just a bit different. And then we're basically having fun.
Yeah.
And we're
also having fun. Yeah. And what is the aim for this project? Are you aiming more for the techno kind of audience, or are you like, because the problem that I see, if you aim to the trance crowd, then you always end up as a warm up.
Yeah.
While in the meantime, because most promoters think that the faster you play, the later you should play. But yeah. in the meantime, I think the stuff that you play could easily be peak time as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. The funny thing is like, a couple of months ago when I had to open for somebody, mm-hmm. Even people came up to me looking at the players and they were amazed that it was only 124.
Yeah, sounds faster.
Yeah, it sounds faster. It's got a lot of energy.
But that's also our motto, really, right?
Yeah. Say again?
That's also our motto. It's like low tempo, high energy.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. That's what we're trying. But then again, people still think that we should open.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, it's still like this sound. It's really hard to get into the not trance events. You really have to convince people. And that's why we basically also started our monthly own wall kind of mix thing, mm-hmm. that we could show what we're playing beside our own tracks.
Yeah.
Because our own tracks are a lot more higher energy. And we play a lot of a bit housey stuff and that kind of things.
Yeah, yeah, but it's
just to convince the promoters to use that kind of stuff as well.
Yeah, but it's also something we try to switch, right? Because we have releases on a state of trance that are a bit more trancey, and then we have other releases that are a bit more housey or a bit more techy. And so we get support from basically DJs in all genres. We've had tracks played by like the credible underground guys, but also by like Martin Garrix. And so we try to just basically target everyone.
Yeah. So the aim is not particularly one crowd. You just want to see what else is, wants.
Well, it's not really an aim. It's in my opinion, it's like we create something and we see where it can go.
Yeah.
It's not that we are we're not going to sit like, we're going to do this. You start something and then, of course, the way it sounds, that's going to take where it's going, to what label we're going to send it.
Mm-hmm.
We're trying to find a crowd basically that's open-minded and just likes having a good time. That's it.
Yeah. But I think it works.
Yeah.
I play a lot of your stuff in my sets as well, especially the recently one, the Flight 643 remix. I played it in Miami the first time and it just went off. I think I was talking with Misha that you did that remix and that you sent it to Ferry for Yabers, I think.
For Miami. Yeah.
I was like, come on, send it to me also. Come on. Come on, don't get
me. He's still mad at me.
Yeah?
Oh, no.
No, because it goes off. And for me, it's in the middle of my set as well. And even though it's a little bit slower in BPM, it goes off. Yeah, as soon as people recognize the song, it's like,
Yeah, but the track is also like somewhat of a switch moment because it builds up pretty slowly. And then you can hear like the Flight 643 coming up and you can hear it. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then in the break and you can hear it and then suddenly it's there and it just goes. It just goes wild.
It smacks you in the face.
And then from there, you can build to something even harder. So it's like a perfect switch moment.
Yeah. Well, it's a rework of a classic, of course. And you also did Rushed. That was one of the first ones.
Yeah.
And then you did Merry-Go-Wild.
Yeah.
Is there more classics that you're going to be doing in the near future? Or what is the plan?
There are a few classics we're working on. And actually with Armada. And I can tell the exact names. Because, you know, with all the rights and all the stuff, we still got to arrange that.
Or produce that are like, oh, you're doing that. I'll be faster.
That's true. So,
tell me.
No, it's going to be a lot of fun. And if you want in on it, be my guest.
Hey, sounds good.
Yeah.
Sounds good. Okay, so is there anything that is already planned in or is it all just in the air? Did you still have to figure it out? Or did you already do some reworks?
We already did some, but like the tracks that are planned in right now for the near future are all originals, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Especially like the one that's out right now with Tanya, that girl.
Yeah.
Hold on to this. But the classics are coming after. So we try to switch those up again.
Yeah, maybe if you join us on State of Trance in London, you can hear them.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. You can hear a very special one. We are preparing a very special one for that one.
There's a nice little bridge that we should build there.
Yeah.
We're getting there in just a little bit as well. Yeah, of course. No, don't worry about it. Yeah, because I would like to know, because now you did some productions, it's picking up, and now you're starting to DJ as well.
Yeah.
Does that affect your own Michiel Helsloot or Michael de Koker career?
Yeah, it affects my Michiel Helsloot career, but I don't mind.
No.
Does it sound
fun? No.
No, it's like I still enjoy basically the classic sets.
Mm-hmm.
That's for me. Well, it's fine. But it's not that I can only feel it's more fun.
Yeah.
People that come with me and see me play a Helsloot set, they can see
that you're enjoying it.
I'm really enjoying it. It's more, maybe it's because of the age and the slow tempo, but it's for me, it gives a lot more energy and joy to see the people actually really dancing, because that's also a thing with the uplifting. It's always the same. You always see one hand standing like this,
and
in
then
the crowd.
It's over, and then the and break then it, comes.
Yeah, yeah. That. But yeah, with the Helsloot sets, you see a crowd moving all the time.
Going.
It keeps on going. Yeah. And that gives me a lot more energy as well. So yeah, it's an influence on my Michiel Helsloot things, mm-hmm, but I really don't mind. It's Yeah,
it's the same for me. You know, the whole Michael de Koker thing as an artist, I basically put behind me anyway.
Yeah.
But I am producing for a lot of other artists. And I spend more time on Helsloot and less on the other artists right now. But I still work for a lot of other artists. So that's still fun.
Yeah, because you have a production, let's say, factory going as well.
Yeah, basically, yeah. Yeah, it's super fun because I get to do like the urban stuff that you see in the video clips. But I also get to do like hard style or like full on techno, and it's really fun because I can see tracks being played by the big artists in all genres, and when you see that and the different crowds and they all react, and then people don't know it's me, but I know.
Yeah.
And that was it's still special every time. It's like the when Ferry played Flight 603 in Miami, and when I see the video, and I have a lot of those videos with tracks where my name is not attached.
Yeah.
But it's still goosebumps.
Yeah, because I guess when Ferry plays a track of you, it's still an aim, like...
Yeah, Ferry is a hero.
Like a
of course, yeah. Yeah, he's a hero, really.
Good times. All right, let's dive into some questions that were submitted by some of our listeners. Frank_Ton wants to know, how did you come up with the artist name?
I kind of came up with, together with Daniel Bonroy, we were just chatting about finding a new name, and I was looking at the Fair West alias with the alias of Tiesto. And I was still struggling how people should pronounce my last name, Helsloot, not Helsloot. So we try to write down how you should pronounce it.
So Sloat becomes Sloat. Sloat,
yeah. But first we had like boat, so with an O and an A, but that looked...
Hellboat.
Odd. Yeah, Hellboat.
I'm glad you didn't do that. Hellboat.
So but then we found out that Sloat, like slow.
Yeah, slower.
But
yeah.
The music is slower, so we were just like, okay, that's fun. And then just for the fun, I put it a line through the O.
Basically to annoy all people. And like, yeah.
To annoy all labels
because
and promoters.
That's what I said. When Misha told me that he was going to do this new project and he wrote it down, I'm like, dude, you can't put this on Spotify or on Google. No one's going to find this.
Yeah, but then
why are you doing this?
No. I looked it up because I'm also engineering information technology, and I looked up how search engines work, and they all the O, they gonna look up other signs from other languages, mm-hmm, as well.
Yep. Yeah.
So I was kind enough, or smart enough to think about, will they find it?
Yeah, but
so
you know what the biggest problem actually is? It's like the
file names.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, it's not possible.
Where we're getting like underscores or like...
Yeah,
like,
because you can't use the two dots either.
No,
in the
that's
file
it.
Name.
No. Yeah. Yeah. So whenever our track are played, it often happens in like a video or whatever, you can see like Hell_Sloat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the same with the file names here on the Pioneers also.
Yeah.
Interesting. Marcel van Houten wants to know, are you excited for London? I guess that's a friend of yours.
Yeah.
Are you excited for London? He wants to know.
No.
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 Okay, so no, July, Dockyards, by the way. We're doing a festival, two stages.
We're not just excited.
We just heard that the Hellsloot is not coming.
No, we're not just excited. We're over the moon.
Yeah, of course we are excited.
Over the moon, that's a nice one. I like that.
Yeah.
Is there a different, because this is going to be your first overseas show, because you did one in Germany already.
It is, yeah.
Is it something that you're already preparing for right now, two months in advance?
It is, yeah. I expect a pretty severe jet lag. So I changed my sleeping schedule right now. Yeah, and I think that's going to help.
Yeah. Did you already practice God Save the Queen? King.
Oh, King.
Sorry.
Oh.
2 weeks ago.
Yeah. And we actually bought those like Royal Scots Guard hats. Oh, thingies.
Awesome. No, but seriously, do you already prepare some for like, are you already like putting tracks together or are you producing something special?
Yeah. Maybe if you're thinking about making edits so we can play a lot more.
Mm-hmm.
We were thinking about what to do and maybe doing some bootlegs with different vocals on it, or because that's really hot in England to put on a classic vocal on a on a banging tune. So
They have the donk back, the offbeat bass.
But it's fun.
Yeah, it's fun.
Yeah.
It's interesting to see that the whole of England is just doing that right now.
Yeah.
Michael Sanoff wants to know, what is the weirdest thing about working together? Good question.
You know what isn't weird about Misha? It's me. I mean,
okay. Bye.
We're having so much fun, and it's like what Misha. The weirdest thing. I know one. He sent me the stems for a track, and I needed to rework them, and they were basically like the tempo, the master tempo on the project was just going down over time. So I put in the files at the start, and they were in sync, and then at the end they were out of sync, and I couldn't figure out why.
It's a
what
new
is
genre.
Happening? I thought it was my problem. I thought I did something wrong. But then I looked into it and you basically just had like the master tempo change.
Yeah.
So
it's a new gimmick. Get used to it.
Yeah, but we should do that at one point and then just send out the DJ promo and see all the DJs try out live and then, holy shit.
Doesn't work. And the funny thing is, last week Giuseppe Taviani was posting something on Instagram that he made a tune in 137.98 BPM. I'm like, oh, everybody that's using Pioneers or Ableton is going to hate you so much, Giuseppe. And he's like, yeah, but that's how it was in the past.
That's it, yeah. But
so that's the gimmick that Misha brings in.
Yeah,
yeah.
That's just how it was in the past.
Yeah. Giuseppe stole it from me.
Yeah.
That must be it.
Yeah.
No, he was like, yeah, but tempos used to float around. I'm like, you don't want to have that right now. You just don't want to have a floating mix when you're DJing.
How is it going to sound on the Pioneers with like the quantizing and all that kind of stuff? It's going to sound like shit.
If there's a tempo change in a song, the record box has a hard time with finding the right grid.
Yeah.
Because for example, the song that I played in your episode, The Noble Six, is a 10.5-minute song that the grid just doesn't manage to grab. I don't know why. So it happens.
Yeah.
So Pioneer, if you're watching this. No. To be honest, Pioneer is doing a fantastic job on creating these.
Yeah, 100%.
Happy with those. Anyways, next question. Trev0034 wants to know, what is the most important lesson you've learned as a DJ? Well, that's Misha.
Poor.
It's a deep question.
How do you say that?
Don't. Okay.
Yeah, don't.
Michael.
Just don't.
Just don't, DJ.
Hey, can't you tell them the story you had like with DJ Jean when you were in Poland?
No.
Now we want to hear it.
Yeah, I know. No.
No one's listening. I'll close the faders.
I can't really say what you should. You always should like follow your own instinct and just do whatever you like.
And have fun with it.
And have fun. Yeah, well, again, there it is. Have fun.
Yeah.
Maybe you can say you should not drink too much.
That's a good one.
Or maybe never put a new vinyl on the one that's playing.
Or take off the wrong needle.
Putting on a new one on the one that's playing, that's even worse.
Have you
worse.
Done that?
Yeah, in Makanti one time.
I know another one. Maybe not push the buttons when Ruben is doing something and basically mess up the tempo.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah.
Because that brings us to the next questions. Safi Lani wants to know, what's the most embarrassing thing that happened while performing?
Yeah, I think that was the putting a vinyl on the record that was playing.
What happened?
A lot of noise. No, it was at Two Days of Chaos in Makanti.
Mm-hmm.
I think I was playing after Tiesto, still with vinyl. I think they had three turntables, and I was just, I always had one turntable where I could use a loop.
Yeah.
Because sometimes, especially back then, you had really long breaks.
Yeah.
And I wanted to these days you can put in a loop in your on your stick. I was always having
some random beats
on, yeah. on one. And I was just mixing up that one and that one. I had to just put it on. And I can assure you, it's a lot of noise in the club, big sound system.
It was a closing set, so people didn't notice.
They were already gone.
I don't know, man. Well, I think the worst that can happen nowadays is that I've done that here in the for the State of Trance as well. That you press the wrong cue.
Yeah.
So the one that's playing, you then press cue and then silence.
Definitely.
And the moment you press it in, you're like the last 100th of a second, you're like, oh shit.
Yeah.
I shouldn't have pressed this, but too late.
Yeah.
And then there's silence.
Happened. Yeah, yeah.
And then you see a lot of awkward people looking at you like.
And all the DJs on the crowd are silently judging like, you.
Idiot. Why are you booked? No. And then they're going to text their friends in this phone. Idiot. Why is he doing this? I know.
It's true.
It happened a few times, to be honest, that I did that. But you know, it happens.
Yeah, it happens. Yeah, it's comes with the job.
And how did you follow up with that when you did that? How did you put it back? That's what you did?
Yeah, just take it off and put it in the break and not acting like nothing happened.
You were like,
it was supposed to do this.
It's skills. Come
on,
guys.
It was just like a white noise riser.
The last one, Julia Lim wants to know, how do you stay up with how do you stay up to date with music, with new music?
Yeah, just listening to a lot of new music. And to be honest, right now is a moment where there's so much good music coming out. And it's tricky sometimes because like in the Spotify era, a lot of music is released. And it's not like back in the days you're anticipating a new tune that's like weeks or months in advance.
Yeah,
right now,
white label era.
Yeah, that's over. And it's basically like Spotify right now. But still, if you look and find, you can find the gems. And there are so many of them right now and so high quality. And it's so cool to find these tracks that no one else is playing and you're wondering, why is no one playing this?
Yeah, it's in the Beatport top 10. Why is, you know, just discovered it.
Yeah, okay.
No one knows about it.
Yeah, okay. Maybe not that kidding. One. Yeah, no, but I know what you mean. Yeah. Like it's very easy to just look in the Beatport top 10 and only play those tracks.
That's what a lot of people do.
Yeah, but the fun is in finding those tracks that are not there, that basically no one knows. And then when you go and look it up on 1001 track list, you basically see it has two plays by some random DJs you don't know.
Yeah.
But when you listen to the track and it's so good, and then you know, okay, this is one for us. We're going to play this.
So where do you find these tracks? Because most of the people just go on Spotify, go to Mint or Technobunk or whatever.
It's so random. It's just random. It's like Spotify random, forums random. Also on Beatport, like basically just browse through and see what's new and what's not being overplayed or whatever.
Yeah.
And it's not like one particular thing we're looking for. It's just the undiscovered gems.
Yeah, and also especially for our radio show, is like what I get a lot of. I'm not sure which promo service it is, but there are a lot of not really big artists and not really big labels, but such good tracks sometimes. And you never see them. You don't see them in Beatport. Well, of course you see them, but not in the top 100 or for that genre. But that for me, that's a playground, the promos
and
stuff.
But on the topic, like I think with State of Trance right now, how it is right now and how you guys have developed it, it's also a lot more open to other genres and a lot of other stuff. And I think you guys are, of course, like for trance, you guys are basically like the highest level people aim for, and also the listeners. And you guys are basically educating people to try and listen to new stuff. And I think you're really doing a great job at it right now.
He's just saying that because... No, thank you. I appreciate that.
I'll collect the money later.
No, he texted me. I'm going to say this.
No, I appreciate that. Thank you for saying that, Mike. Well, that's the end of... because we're way over time already. Thank you so much for answering all these questions and sharing the stories.
Thank you very much.
And I look forward to see your set. 2nd of July, Dockyards in London. Be there or be square or be slow.
Be fast. Back next week.
I'll see you next week for a new episode of State of Trance. And here in the podcast is going to be Medic. So if you have any questions for him, write them down here in the comment section below here. And otherwise, I'll see you next time for a new podcast. See you. Bye-bye.
Later.
Thank you for tuning in. Check all previous episodes on YouTube or your favorite podcast portal. A State of Trance podcast.